Welcome to Supersize Science, where we feature research and discoveries nationwide enabled by advanced computing technology and expertise at the Texas Advanced Computing Center of the University of Texas at Austin. I'm Jorge Salazar, science writer at TAC. Scientists are looking deeper into the mysterious characteristics of vortexes and turbulence in recent studies by Texas Tech University scientists that use Frontera, Stampede 2, and Lone Star 5 supercomputers here at TAC. Allocated through the Extreme Science and Engineering Discovery Environment, funded by the National Science Foundation. A possible application of the Texas Tech Vortex research could help improve fuel efficiency for cars and help develop energy-saving aircraft designs and more. The Vortex research was published October of 2021 in the Annual Review of Fluid Mechanics. On the line to discuss the findings are study co-authors Jay Yao and Fazal Hussain. Yao is a postdoctoral researcher in the Department of Mechanical Engineering at Texas Tech. Hussain is the President's Endowed Distinguished Chair in Engineering, Science, and Medicine, and Senior Advisor to the President of Texas Tech University. Hussain is also Yao's advisor and a professor in the Departments of Mechanical Engineering, Physics, Chemical Engineering, Petroleum Engineering, Internal Medicine, and Cell Physiology and Molecular Biophysics. Drs. Yao and Hussain, welcome to Supersized Science.
Nothing can be more topical than these tornadoes in the last few days. 30 tornadoes killed probably over 100 people and maybe damaged worth billions of dollars, maybe thousands of billions of dollars. So that's a direct living example of vortex. That's a vortex. You can have such vortices in ocean. And when you have many such vortices form over seas, they together come together. If vortices are separate, they have a tendency to come together if they're in the same direction and march to form bigger and bigger. That's the genesis of hurricane. And so these are all vortices. The hurricane is a little bit more complicated. Tornado is very simple vortex, a straightforward vortex. You can see it. Sometimes they have the dust showing the core of the vortex. Of the tornado. Today, there is nothing more. Last two, 3 days, full-time news, CNN and BBC is just this tornado. There were 30 tornadoes hit 6 states. So it's a good time to have such an example. So there are many such vortices within the ocean, and tornadoes, hurricanes, cyclones. In Indian subcontinent, hurricanes are called cyclones. I think cyclones are both on land and water. Hurricane is mostly on water, and tornado mostly on land. So this is a very clear example of vortex. Second is flow behind a wind turbine, three vortices intertwirling around, and then the one vortex impinges on the next wind turbine, and that deteriorates its his performance. I mean, actually, Jay should be talking all the time.
One takeaway we found that vortex, particularly we study vortex, what we call vortex reconnection. Yeah, if we have two vortex come together, it will reconnect and recombine to become form two new vortex. Yeah. So we found that this is one of the main physical mechanisms of turbulence cascade. Turbulence is another very difficult subject. So it can explain how the energy can cascade from large-scale structures to small-scale structures. This is one key finding. Then beyond that, we also find that reconnection can be used to study a very important mathematical question, which is the finite time singularity formation of what we call Navier-Stokes equations, whether there's a singularity of Navier-Stokes equation or not. This is our tool. And other things we found related to that when we studied that relationship between vortex reconnection and aerodynamic noise generation. So other is like also helicity dynamics. The helicity is another quantity, which is the velocity times a dot, what is the helicity. So these are the main issue covered in the energy of fluid mechanics. Some are done by ourselves, some are done by other people because it's a review paper. So we just summarize all what progress in this stage about what has three connections.
In the vortex dynamics, you can take a 3-semester course, graduate course. So it is a very vast subject. There are very massive books. So you know, it's like asking, tell us about what is life. So you can talk for 10 hours or talk for one sentence. Vortex is a very, very vast subject. You can have typically incompressible vortex, like your tornado is essentially incompressible. Okay. Then you can have a compressible, like the hypersonic jet or rocket flow behind. There are a lot of vortices. Not all vortices are wing-tip vortices. Then you also have stratified vortex, like in the ocean and the atmosphere. I mean, ocean, the stratification is much more than in the atmosphere, and so on and so forth. So fundamental question is, I may give a slightly different color. The Wilson, when he got the Nobel Prize in 1984 in physics, he said, when he meets God, he will ask two questions. Why did he create quantum mechanics and why did he create turbulence? And he said, he didn't say if, he said when he meets us, and that he has a clear idea about the quantum mechanics, but he wonders even if God knows why he created turbulence and will it ever be understood? So that's the bottom line, okay? And almost all flows except flow up the trunk of a tree or the leaves, the flow is turbulent. So that, and also flow in your capillaries is laminar, even though it is pulsatile. It's time dependent because of your pulse of your heart. Otherwise, more or less every flow, except for dust or, you know, microorganisms, flow is turbulent. So turbulence is very important for control of drag of aeroplanes, so you can save fuel. And if you save fuel, means also you're also saving the atmosphere from products of pollution. And drag of a submarine or a, you know, regular passenger airplane and also drone and so on. So the flow happens to be turbulent, and turbulent flows defy any explanation because it is random, but it's not totally random. It is not featureless like granular turbulence. There are turbulence of many scales, all superimposed. So how do you explain such a phenomenon? And second is, typically structures originate in the largest scale and on the average goes to small scale, but in between there is also reverse transfer, but those are higher order questions. The first question is, what is the mechanism that turbulence is converted, or turbulent kinetic energy is converted from large scales to small scales? And this is called production. And the process from large to small is cascade. Cascade is part of production. But when the ultimately all turbulence will be dissipated into heat, and this process is called dissipation. Namely, if you have a bunch of kids swimming in the swimming pool, I guarantee you by the end of the day, if the water temperature did not change, the swimming pool will be hotter because so many people have stirred up the water so much, and there is dissipation. So the question is, in what way does turbulence cascade from the large scale to small scale? So Kolmogorov was probably still the most prominent turbulence expert. He was a mathematician. There are many theories about Kolmogorov. So he drew a bunch of big eggs and little eggs. But you know, if you are in fluid mechanics, flow doesn't occur in pockets. Their flow is associated with vorticity. Vortex line cannot just abruptly stop. So it has to continue up to infinity. So there are a tangle of vortex lines. And so vorticity provides a more deterministic approach to understanding, explaining turbulence physics and also cascade. But no one has yet shown exactly how cascade happens. There was a Lundgren. He said it is a basis by which, you see, by dimensional argument, Kolmogorov showed that spectra must be wave number 2 to the power minus 5/3 from large to small. This is the slope that dictates or denotes the rate of transfer from the slope. But how it happens, you say, well, if there's a sheet of vorticity, it'll roll up. And as you continuously stretch, it will keep on spinning. And that spacing between the sheets is 5/3. But such sheet does not happen in reality. Like the flow inside your trachea is turbulent, even in the heart is turbulent, even in the descending aorta is turbulent, but these are not there. So for many years, we have been thinking that it must be reconnection. So here is a one vortex, and here is another vortex. If you have any arbitrary two vortical filaments. So this, if you have any arbitrary two vortex filaments, they will automatically, this part will push this part up, and this part will push this part up. So they will become antiparallel. And if, naturally, they will never, if it's antiparallel, it's a dipole, it's just move. But if there's a curvature, they will also move. They'll bang into each other. And because there's viscosity, these vortex lines, which are only in this and this, they'll reconnect. That means this is a topological transformation because neighbors are no more neighbors. If you have a sheet and you put a cut, then you have changed the topology. Or a spoon and a sheet of paper, the same topology. I know that, I'm sure you know this stuff. So these are topological transformations. And so we claimed for many years that it must be this reconnection which is the underlying cause. And so he showed by direct numerical simulation until about 3 years back, the highest Reynolds number is just the circulation, the spinning velocity divided by viscosity. It's called Reynolds number of vortex. We could not go above 10,000. 10,000 barely could go. This limits the upper limit of supercomputers. So, but the trailing vortex of 747, Boeing or Airbus, 380, is about 10 million. So it's beyond any possible chance of simulation for probably many decades, if not many centuries. You will not be able to simulate this. But we were able to push it high enough to see that, yes, some of our ideas are indeed correct, on which we have written other papers. And so this reconnection, you see, like if you have two rings, one is red and one is blue, you collide. Forms two rings, half red, half blue, half red, half blue. And of course, this was a miracle when we first discovered, not us, Safran and the Japanese professor. And then, but it turned out that this red and blue is not complete. There's some other threads and they are not clearly visible because they're stretched. When you stretch vortex filament, vorticity increases. But the dye or smoke concentration decreases. Pretty soon you have a very intense vortex sitting here, but there's no dye or smoke, so you don't see it. And 95% of research in turbulence in the last 100 years have been primarily based on visualization without realizing, unless the diffusivity of the scalar and the vorticity is same, which is called Schmidt number, that means Schmidt number one, then the two fields are quite different. So dynamically significant events in a turbulent flow or in vortex interactions are not visible and have been obscured from observation. So these are some of the details we have. And then what happens? So this vortex reconnection, it creates many smaller structures. So this is one way of saying it is cascade, but it is also very critical. Like if you have let's say a ring, these are all idealization of gasoline in a ring of air. So they'll reconnect. So this is a way of getting fuel and air to mix at the molecular level so you can get more juice out of the fuel. As you know, part of the energy that we could use from combustion in an automobile is not used because there's not enough mixing in the carburetor. So some of the fuel leaves without being burned. Some of it burned in the tailpipe or outside. That's wasted because they're not using that thermal energy. So it's mixing. This is simple mixing, chemical reaction, and also mass transfer. All these, where is mass transfer most prominent? From the trees. You see, the water is continuously evaporating from the leaves, and it's being transported away by turbulence. So there is has to be, this has to be replenished by the water coming through the roots. Even though you cut a tree, you don't see water coming out. The water speed is very slow, and the amount of water is very little. But there is water flow because there is water is being, the vegetation is losing water, so you have to irrigate. So there are many, many such the spray, you know, of the insecticide and the even the fertilizer spray. These are also turbulence phenomena. And the same thing also, the flow behind a rocket. There's intense turbulence mixing. So turbulence normally we mean by just too fluid. Even we don't sometimes worry about viscosity. But it is viscous. And also, they are non-Newtonian, the fuel you're injecting. And so they mix and burn. And if they burn, suppose you have oxygen and you have fuel. They come together, they burn. Then it forms an insulation. So they cannot come together anymore and burn. So unless you break it up and penetrate that oxygen and the fuel mix, then it cannot continue to burn. So the combustion is a very sophisticated branch of fluid turbulence. You also have hypersonic flow. Jay has also a formula how to know in the hypersonic flow where there's a vortex and where there is not vortex.
What's the most important thing that you want people to know about using supercomputers to understand turbulence, to understand vortexes?
I think that's, as I say, that supercomputer is a very important tool for studying turbulence and vortex dynamic, in addition to theoretic and experimental approaches. And I think that to become more and more important in vortex research and turbulence research, because that it becomes powerful enough to give us more details of the flows and give more physics of flows. Yeah. Our problems are still limited to what is, you know, small scale problems are not comparable to the practical problems. I think that as a progress of supercomputer, and then you can slowly tackle more realistic problems. Yeah.
To understand turbulence phenomena, like even in the ocean or atmosphere, you have two approaches. Theory is two ideas. Either you experiment or you do numerical experiment, which you call simulation. In physical experiment, there are many, many problems. There is an inherent uncertainty. I'm sure you've heard the word uncertainty, which is quite related to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, that nothing you can measure as accurately as you'd like to know. As Heisenberg is slightly different, his position and momentum. You cannot know both accurately. You can know one accurately, not the other one. So apart from uncertainty, there is a probe size effect. So no matter how small the probe is, hot wires, you cannot see it. It's so small. I have used 0.7 micron diameter hot wire. You cannot see below 20 micron. So, but you have to have a certain length, and there's a n conduction effect. And but you're averaging over the length of the wire, but the structures are smaller than the length. So optical also, there are many, many problems. You have to get signal from a point, but it's, you have to do all kinds of filtering to zero in at a point. But then if you zero in at a point, you have one particle, then nothing, another particle. So you're not getting statistics. You have to have many particles to get a statistics. So the experimental facilities have many problems of facility design and many problems in instrumentation. Then, of course, data acquisition, data storage, and data processing. And the input-output is also the most limiting constraint. So supercomputer, I was an experimentalist for over five decades. And I came to the conclusion, the things I want to know, there is no way you can ever get these details by experiments or visualization or combination thereof. So supercomputer is the only possible solution, except we can do it only for Lorentz number. Now there is an underlying philosophy in turbulence. It's called Reynolds number similarity, that some statistics does not change so much with Reynolds number. So if you do low Reynolds number, which you can do accurately, you can extrapolate what is happening to high Reynolds number. But still, it's not the same thing. So the real world data are not available experimentally. They're not available computationally. The supercomputers are not super enough yet. This point should hit you hard. That's the main point. So without supercomputers, we could not do this so far what we have done. But we are not there yet, anywhere near.
You've been listening to Jay Yao and Fazil Hussein of Texas Tech University. Supersized Science is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world, brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin. The opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the host and not of the University of Texas at Austin. For the Texas Advanced Computing Center, I'm Jorge Salazar.